bring yourself in here to this courthouse on a totally gorgeous, wonderful Wisconsin fall day. Well, we're very happy to see you all. We have two matters on which we're going to have a formal hearing this morning, and then after that we will conclude and come sit down here and informally discuss those as well as some other things that are on our agenda. We've had a number of additions since the list of speakers was put together this morning, so I goof it up and I don't get someone, just wave at me and help me out. But I will begin to call now petition 1406. And as a presenter, I have Keith Saleen. And then I have Dean Dietrich next, Nick Schweitzer after that. So that'll give the next two people notice that they're going to follow Mr. Saleen. And then I have several more names as well. So we will begin with you, Mr. Saleen. If you will proceed, that will be terrific.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Justices. It's good to see you this morning and good to be here on a beautiful fall day. I'm here to present to you petition 14-06, a petition for discretion. And the purpose of this petition is to address the court's concerns that were expressed in several court decisions about a year or so ago regarding the treatment of de minimis violations of rules and the appropriate allocation of OLR's resources and priorities. The mechanism that is provided for your consideration includes changing the definition of cause to proceed, and then some of the language in the rules in 22.02, 03, 22.25, sub 3, sub 4, regarding the standard for beginning a formal investigation when something comes out of intake, whether it occurs at OLR or in the special investigative process. The expectations that I have if the court adopts this petition is, first of all, that OLR will exercise more discretion. The PRC and the Special Investigators, Special Preliminary Review Committee, also would exercise more discretion applying the new standard of cause to proceed. Many grievances that now result in formal investigations or diversions, private reprimands, and in some cases, complaints filed with the court would be either closed or diverted because they would not involve harm to the public. They would be de minimis violations and otherwise be in accordance with the criteria that I have described in the memorandum in support of the petition. I also expect that OLR would prioritize its resources on the more serious matters and pay greater attention to them. I expect that the timeliness of the processing of those matters will be better if the court adopts this petition.
Excuse me, Mr. Saleen. You know, it seems to me that a number of the petitions we've seen, a number of issues that have been raised, center around attorneys not following every detail, or in many cases, several details, of the reporting requirements when it comes to trust fund accounts. And it seems to me we've seen cases where no one has been harmed and that no one's out any money, but it also seems to me seems to be the case that when an attorney is not in compliance, they're really not in compliance. It's not just a one-time deal. Would there be any mechanism that OLR could use to divert those cases to some kind of education or some kind of training with additional monitoring? So there are folks out there, and most of the law firms in this state are sole practitioners, as you know. And oftentimes I think it's easy to get overwhelmed by the requirements of practice, including the reporting requirements. Is that one of the areas that you had in mind, and is there something that can be done in the education process to address that?
Absolutely. It's a great question. There are several things I would like to say in response to that. I think that you'll find helpful. First of all, petition 1407, which has been filed, I expect will be scheduled for a hearing addresses a lot of those concerns. And in particular, with regard to the record keeping, one of the significant portions of that petition is to move the record keeping requirements out of the rule. There would be basic standards in the rule, but the detailed requirements would be reconstituted as OLR guidelines and not as rule violations. So I think that will help with a lot of the technical aspects.
That's the rule relating to electronic banking?
Yes, it is, Justice Abrams.
There will be scheduled in December 2015.
I'm expecting this fall, but I don't know the date.
And you would be in favor of that?
Yes, that is one that OLR filed after an extensive study with a large group of individuals from different walks of life, different areas of practice. We put together a petition that we think the court should adopt.
Are there other areas that could be diverted more into training and education as opposed to sanctions that you might be have in mind?
Yes, and again, a couple of things in that regard. First of all, 1406, this petition will give us a little bit more discretion in that regard. The second thing that I think is really important is that we are already able to exercise a little bit more discretion in the trust account rule because of our diversion programs, and we also have a long-term practice of providing advice and education. Our office sponsors trust account educational seminar twice a year, and it's open to any attorney. We open it for their office managers or whoever on the lawyer staff would be providing the trust account accounting and record keeping for the attorney. Our annual reports from year to year, and the most recent one we published last week late. You should have a paper copy coming to you through distribution. It's already on the website. You can see that there's a portion in there every year on trust account program. And so that describes the number of instances where we've had diversions for minor violations or where we have issued advisory letters for minor technical violations of the rules. You'll see there's really a propensity of that, a great preponderance of that compared to discipline.
Good.
Didn't you do a reorganization or a slate moving of people into the trust account area and are you talking about this?
That's exactly right,
yeah.
Justice Abrams.
My understanding from the report is that you put some more people into the trust account division or whatever you call that entity so that you could pay more heed to it. Is that right?
It is, Justice Abrams, but it wasn't an additional position. It was reallocation of someone who was doing other formal investigations. But, yes, the answer to your question is yes.
And my understanding is that the mission of OLR is threefold. One, to protect the public. Two, to give due process and fair consideration to the attorneys against whom grievances have been filed. And three, education. Is that right?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I apologize for being blunt. Those are all things that we should do, obviously.
But that's what you say in your blue report.
We do think those things are important. But if we're talking about what the court has said about OLR's mission, it's in Rule 2103, and it's very perfunctory. I wouldn't say it's bland, but it's very matter of fact, certainly. First of all, the preamble to Chapter 21 says that the purpose of the lawyer regulation system is to protect the public from misconduct by Wisconsin attorneys and to supervise the practice of law. So
okay.
We look at that purpose, and due process is always important, and also justice is doing justice. Making people whole is always important, but those are not things that are expressly stated there, and I think that's one of the reasons we struggle from time to time with what we're supposed to do.
The preamble, the 2103 has to be changed?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think we just have to understand that we are going to accept some mission creep in terms of what we ought to do because it's the right thing to do. It's still within.
So is my summary of protect the public, due process to the lawyers, and education correct? And if not, why don't you add?
That's certainly part of supervising the practice,
right.
That there would be
okay.
Due process in that always in any regulatory scheme. And doing justice, making grievance whole, or educating lawyers is certainly part of supervising and protecting. So I think it's well within that. The mission of OLR is in 21.02, I think. I'll have to check the rule. I'm sorry, I didn't bring it with me this morning. I should have done that. But OLR's mission is to receive grievances and to evaluate them, decide whether to do formal investigations, to do those investigations, divert attorneys where appropriate, process matters for the PRC, prosecute complaints where there's cause to proceed, handle reinstatement proceedings, those kinds of things. It's a very matter-of-fact, task-oriented mission statement in Chapter 21.
All right. I'd like to move to the proposed amendments to the rules. I favor giving the OLR more discretion in prosecution. Isn't that what this is all about?
Yes.
Okay. So I favor that. My question goes to whether these amendments accomplish that. And I had expected that it would be a declarative statement in the rules proposed that the OLR has discretion in prosecuting grievances. And I could have further comments, which I think we asked you about, saying something like, whether you did it in a comment, I would probably not. I would do it in a rule, saying the OLR has a discretion in whether to prosecute de minimis, is the term that's used here in some of the cases. It talks about technical violations. I don't know what that exactly means, but I'm assuming it's de minimis or their equivalent. And that we're talking about de minimis violations. We're talking about, I think, if I read your stuff well, where the lawyer admits to a de minimis violation, where the public hasn't been harmed, or there has been remediation of the harm. We have cases where the trust accounts have been used for personal, lawyers' personal expenses, but then the lawyer puts back the money so that the client is not harmed. But there's been a conversion under the law. The OLR doesn't have to prosecute and can issue a caution letter or diversion or private reprimand accepted or whatever. That's what I think this is about, is it?
Yes, it is about that.
Okay.
Except that OLR, of course, as you know, would not issue the private reprimand. There would be... It would
can't
follow the normal process.
Yeah. Can't you issue a private reprimand if the party agrees?
It must be approved by the referee who issues the reprimand.
Okay, but it doesn't come to the court.
That does not have to come to the court if it's based on consent. That's correct.
Okay. That's what I thought this is about. So here's my problem with the drafting. One, it doesn't specifically say that. But, you know, I can live with other words. It doesn't matter to me. But what I'm concerned about is whether we accomplish this. And my understanding is that you could decide in any stage of the proceeding not to prosecute. So you could do it after your intake. People tell you, hey, there's a violation here, right? You can do it after your investigators decide... tell you what the violation they think is. You can do it after the PRE says you've got probable cause, or whatever the technical language is, right?
Under the rules, I believe the answer to your question is no.
No, but under your amendment, what's
answer
your
answer?
Answer
would be yes.
Yeah, that's what
I'm
trying to get to
yes.
What this accomplishes. And even after you've filed a complaint, if your lawyer representing the OLR says, we shouldn't be going forward with this, and you can drop it then,
I mean, I think that's what this is about.
Yes.
Okay. So here's my problem with the language, if I can find it. The language deals with, I have too many pieces of paper here, possibility of Let's see, 22001 under definitions, cause to proceed. Is that right?
That's
is amended.
Correct. Yes.
Cause to proceed means a reasonable belief based on review of an investigative report that an attorney has engaged in misconduct that warrants discipline, okay, or has a medical incapacity. Okay, so cause to proceed is a reasonable belief based on an investigative report that warrants discipline. And what you added here is that warrants discipline. If I'm wrong, you know, we've had several versions here, so.
You have it correct. Thank you.
2202 takes intake. The director shall review each matter referred by staff and do one or more of the following. This is after intake. Commence an investigation where there is sufficient information to support a possible finding of cause to proceed, right?
Yes.
And then we have the same thing on 2203. The director shall investigate any grievance that presents sufficient information to support a possible finding of cause to proceed. I'm not going to go into the others because they all raise the same problem. For me, was same issue. Definitions. To test the definition and test the definition's use in a rule, what you do is substitute the definition for the defined term. That's the acid test, right?
I agree.
Okay. So here, the director shall review each matter referred by staff. This is intake. Commence an investigation where there is sufficient information to support a possible finding. And then it says, based on review of an invest, I'm substituting cause to proceed. A reasonable belief based on review of an investigative report. Now, 2202 says, it's giving you discretion not to investigate, but your discretion is based on cause to proceed, which includes an investigation. You see what my problem is? So are we talking about different kinds of investigative reports here?
No, we are not.
So under intake, you needn't commence an investigation unless there's sufficient information to support a possible finding of cause to proceed. Is that right?
I'm sorry. You mean currently or under this proposal?
No, I'm talking about this proposal.
Thank you. That helps me.
I just want to tell you, there's dispute as to whether the current rules give you discretion. But we're beyond that dispute. You take the position it doesn't give you discretion. You have acted on the basis it doesn't give you discretion. It may be debatable, but we're done debating it. We're going to now, in my view, it doesn't have to be the court's view, give you discretion. So what bothers me is cause to proceed means after an investigation. But here, we're talking about other different kinds of investigations. After there's been an investigation on cause to proceed. I don't understand that. You see why I think it's circular.
I do, but I think that it's resolved by the phrase in front of it, a possible finding, because what we're doing at intake is evaluating whether to conduct a formal investigation, as I described in my response to the letter. So we can evaluate whether we're going to find that evidence that would constitute a report at some point. So I think it's okay as is. I'm not saying
cause to
be
proceed,
something else, but it is okay.
But cause to proceed is based on on reviewing an investigative report.
Yes.
That's what it says.
But in the current rule, cause to proceed is defined, as you can see from the line in, line out, and we're making that determination at intake right now based upon a misconduct standard. But when it goes to the PRC, they review it based on that standard. But when my office decides what to do with it under 22.05, we are not reviewing the report that goes to the PRC. We're reviewing another report, obviously, that we have, but the rules don't even require that we have a report at that point until we go to the PRC. We're making decisions about that even right now before we go to the PRC. So I think the phrase a possible finding is adequate. I'm not saying that I would not be open to different language, but I think this is acceptable language, and it's clear to me, and it's clear to the staff at OLR that it would allow us to evaluate at intake what we expect would be available as evidence and exercise judgment there, which is what we do now.
Yeah, so the possible finding is just a qualifier. You don't have at that point in time investigative report that shows it warrants discipline, but there's a possible finding,
right.
Correct? So
right.
In the preliminary stages, that's your qualifier, correct?
That's correct.
In order to take care of this circuitous situation, and looking at definition SCR Chapter 21, cause to proceed, the circuitous nature would be eliminated if, I think, you took out based on a review of an investigation in sub 2, an investigative report.
I agree with that proposal.
Well, what does that do
right.
Yes,
it modifies the application of the definition in other rules, particularly the rule regarding the PRC review, because one of the issues is what does the PRC review, and right now the rule says an investigative report.
Well, they can review an investigative report even if you don't have to.
The question is whether they would be instructed by this court to look at more than that, whether there would be a hearing, whether there would be appearances, whether there would be evidence presented forensically, like at trial. All those are questions that are resolved by that language in the definition, review of an investigative report.
Aren't you carrying too much weight on this definition then, because it has to deal with you, PRE, and I don't know whom, but we should look at that then.
Right. I'm wanting to find a way to use a common definition, so we're talking about the same ideas in different parts of the rule. I understand that there may be some issues about whether it's a perfect fit there, but I do believe it's a good fit. Yeah.
You could, I would guess, I yes. haven't put this together mm-hmm. yet, but my guess is that based on a review of an investigative report, arguably could be taken out of the definition of cause to proceed and put in that part of the rule which deals with how the preliminary review committee proceeds. My guess is if you would be able to do that. But
there would be other ways to draft the rules, I agree, yes.
And I mean, it isn't just a matter of other ways to draft the rule. It is a matter of getting rid of a circuitous drafting problem.
I would agree there may be better ways to draft the rule.
Okay.
Why didn't you consider just saying the director's office has discretion to not proceed
right.
at all stages of the fit, all stages of the OLR proceeding at all stages until it goes to the Supreme Court, until a complaint is filed, or even after a complaint is filed, after a referee report. I mean, you can list it so everybody knows.
Right.
See, my problem with the draft is it carries too much on a few words that have meaning only to people who are been in the system 15 years. Not to someone coming to the system relatively new. Doesn't anywhere say discretion? If that's what we're aiming at, why don't we say it? And why don't we say the grounds for your exercising discretion? de minimis admission, no harm or remedial harm. It's not a pattern of conduct. You have a whole variety of criterion that you sent the court in response to our questions on this, and shouldn't somehow that be put in so everybody knows what's happening? And at the last, one of the last administrative board meetings, a member of the board asked you, what is the review of your discretion under this? Remember that?
Yes.
And let's see if I can pull out the, I've got the minutes here. I think you responded, and I didn't check, but I'm assuming you're right, that the director has review of someone else's discretion, and that the PRE has review of the discretion, right?
Yes, that's true, Justice Abramson.
And it seems to me that raises another issue that I'm going to talk to Attorney Dietrich about, as to what, if we're giving this discretion, is there any other needed review proceedings? And that raises the other question that in the Greeson report, they found too many opportunities for review and appeal.
Right. What I asked for in this petition was what I thought I needed to exercise discretion properly. I did not ask for a broader grant of discretion. And your suggestion would tend to me to mean that there was a much broader grant of discretion than I have asked for. And that raises the balance then between that and accountability, which I think is important. The accountabilities we have in this system are certainly adequate. They are not things that we should scale back. It's really important that they exist and that they be in place. Everybody know what they are and that they be meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
So I would not recommend that we scale them back at all. I do think they're adequate for the exercise of discretion for which I have asked.
What is exactly you're asking for? That's an issue. I thought you were asking for discretion at any opportunity in the proceeding, even if it gets here. But let's stop it once it gets here.
It's laid out in the definition of cause to proceed, which then exists in the rules in the petition, but also exists in 2205, also exists for the PRC, the Special Preliminary Review Panel, in rules.
Oh, we're talking about your discretion now.
Right. The difference is that these specific steps are identified in the rules, so that when those decisions are made, the rule then talks about the application of discretion with regard to those decisions. So, yes, it could happen there. It doesn't relate to things that happen before the referee because we have supervision by a referee who can review that and, of course, reports to you. So, right.
But do you have full discretion at any time in those proceedings up to the referee? You have full proceed not to proceed if you don't think there's a violation.
We've never litigated in the extreme whether OLR wanted to dismiss some meritorious case, and the referee then had an argument with us about whether we could do such a thing. And I don't anticipate that kind of thing, but it has happened in other systems. So I don't view that as absolute. I think the referee, when the referee has the case, would be making recommendations to the court about dismissal, and the court would be acting on those violations.
Right. Well, let's take it away from the referee.
Mm-hmm.
But until you get to the referee, you have discretion.
Yes, because when we have a great deal more discretion there because the rules that apply to that process don't use the word shall in terms of how the director is to make those decisions.
All right.
But these rules and within our investigative and intake processes use the word shall.
So you think if I say this is for de minimis or technical, where the attorney admits, where there's remediation or there's been no harm, and it's not a pattern of conduct, you think if we say that's how you should exercise your discretion, are we increasing your discretion or limiting your discretion?
You're increasing it from where it is now, and you're also limiting it.
Oh, that.
But
are you increasing it from your rule proposal or decreasing it from your rule proposal?
You are decreasing it from my proposal because my proposal would provide the ability to, in consultation with the board and in the review of cases with the PRC or upon receipt of guidance from this court in its review of cases or otherwise, to modify those criteria, which, if in the rule, would require us to address that as a matter of a rule change, I believe.
You said you, in consultation with the board. What board?
Board of Administrative Oversight.
But they don't deal with individual cases.
No, but they review policy. They see reports of what we do, and they get information about the dispositions of our cases in terms of categories and frequencies. So it's an area of their interest as an oversight.
And you exercise your discretion in consultation with the PRA, is that?
The preliminary review committee does it case by case, yes. And we also discuss it during our meetings or during our open meetings, particularly the joint meeting with the board, if there are issues about the operations of the PRC or issues relating to the effective operating or processing of our cases. Those are topics on those joint meeting agendas, yes. In these situations where we're using discretion, the grievant and the respondent attorney would be told exactly that. We would tell them the truth about what we have done and why we've exercised discretion and what factors we considered when we did that, and those review processes would remain intact, as we've discussed already this morning. That was all I wanted to present, at least up front. If you had some other questions, I'd be happy to help you.
Mr. Sloan, I do. If you exercise discretion on a particular matter that under this new rule, one in which you might have felt you had to proceed under the current rules, do you have a record of that such if this attorney comes back again, you consider the fact that you've exercised discretion once and he still or she is still having difficulties, and how do they fit together?
That works very well, Justice. Thank you, Chief Justice. But what we do is we have the records of closed or dismissed matters under Rule 2245 for a period of 3 years after the end of the year in which the matter was closed or dismissed. So after that, they're expunged. So we would have about a little bit more time period in order to have that information available to use in the exercise of our discretion. So if we see a pattern, we expect we would see a pattern within 3 years. To be quite frank with you, if it's more than 3 years and it's expunged, it doesn't enter into the exercise of discretion. It's gone.
Okay. Thank you.
One of the recommendations of the study committee, and my hat's off to you for bringing in this study committee. That was a very good thing, I think, for you to do, and you are to be commended for it. One of the recommendations or assertions was that the PRC doesn't have to decide which are the specific rules of violation. And the inference from the consultants was that to do that might be slowing down the process or minimizing your discretion. Do you have any thoughts on that particular recommendation? And do you intend to do anything about it? And if not, what are your thoughts?
Thank you, Justice Bradley. I listened to that. I have a concern that it would draw back from the amount of accountability on our cases, and I don't think that's a good idea. I know the correlation rates are very high, but I think that the PRC should be looking at this count by count, case by case, and count by count, because it provides for a greater accountability. It does not hold us up. It may have us do more work up front than we are doing. But I think that the fact that we have those kinds of accountabilities is one of the reasons why the correlation of what violations we propose and they are so high, because we've gotten used to doing the kind of work that is something that satisfies that scrutiny. And I think even more importantly, when we're talking about deciding whether to file a public complaint against the lawyer, if the preliminary review committee has not looked at it count by count, that's a lot of discretion for the OLR director to decide what to charge. And so there could be a great difference, and there could be a difference of opinion, an actual belief in the adequacy of the evidence between the PRC and the director of OLR as to what is charged in a case.
I would urge you just to consider again, you know, you've heard me speak about the what you would refer to as the high correlation between what you bring and what the PRC approves. My recollection, and you corrected me last time when I made that recollection. And
some jocularity because we enjoy the numbers, I think.
That's right. You're so good that I think they affirm you. Is it 100% of the time, or is it 99?
It's 99.
99, okay. You know. To the extent that not having the PRC have to specifically pass on each rule violation, to the extent that the report says the practice of the PRC determining which rules to charge is not required by the rules. Rather, it seems to be a culture developed by the PRC and sanctioned by the OLR. So you might want to take a look at that to the extent that it fits into what we're talking about now, which is greater discretion that results in more timely dispositions of matters, because the reality is that high incidence. The word accountability is a great word, and we all are accountable, but it seems as this is coming out in practice, that has a little less weight, and maybe the weight is in favor of greater discretion and moving it along.
Yes. Two things, if I may. First, I think that if we're going to adopt this petition in some form, then there's going to be greater exercise of discretion that would require greater review. So we have to be careful about doing two things at once here, I believe. We would want to see how this works and how the reviews are and make sure that we don't change policies that move us in two different directions that would leave us a gap in accountability. Second, the correlation rate is high right now with the PRC. The correlation rate between counts charged and counts that the court approves is also high and getting higher over the last 2 years. So, and I say that just to indicate that this is not a bad thing. It doesn't mean that we're overworking things necessarily. It may slow us down a little bit. But it is good when we are working well together, as long as we respect that we are good neighbors with good fences and we are doing a meaningful job of reviewing it, which we are, and this helps us to do that. The last 2 years in the reports given to the board and looking at counts charged and counts found by the court, the percentage was 94% over the last 2 years. It's higher than that because when the petitions for voluntary revocation come, our report isn't tracking the number of counts there, but there are typically a lot of them there, so it's good. In addition to that, OLR dismissed about 380 of those counts voluntarily during the last 2 years during the process. So if you deduct that from counts charged, it's actually 97%, but it's somewhere between 94 and 97%. You know, there's not a magic number, but it certainly should be more than 90. And it probably shouldn't be 100. It never really will be 100. But I think the message that I would want to communicate to you is that the correlations are good. They're still healthy. If it's a little bit of overkill, it's not hurting us at the PRC. It's not costing us a great deal of time and effort. It may be causing us to do a more thorough, accurate job of reporting, which is exactly what it should do. And if we draw back from that, then we're going to be in a situation where the complacency might settle into the system, and we might develop some more cases with it. We might see that those percentages go down, and we may see cases coming where we're going to be wondering about who decided what, why, and we don't want that. We just don't want that. I don't want that.
If the PRC finds probable cause, do you have to make that charge in the complaint?
Right now, I believe the answer is yes.
Under the new proposed rules, do you have to make the charge?
No.
Okay. So So it gives you discretion not to take the ruling of the PRC.
That's correct. Right. I mean, they'll be exercising discretion, and I'll be exercising discretion before and after their finding.
Mr. Saleen, how do you want me to vote here when we go into conference? Do you want me to vote to adopt this petition word for word, or what?
The short answer is yes.
No, if I may.
But I'm still...
Before you answer.
Too late.
I may ask a question in a minute that has already been asked, because I'm having a little difficulty hearing. And the marshal knows how strongly I feel that the sound in this chamber should be improved. The sound in Lancaster, Wisconsin, was far better than the sound in this chamber. So if I ask a question that's already been answered, I apologize for that. But now I would like to have you answer the question about how you want me to vote.
Well, I proposed it because I think it's the right solution. So I would like you to vote for it as it's been drafted. We've had some discussions about modifying some of the language based on Justice Abrahamson's questions of me. I would be open to other language that might be better. I don't have the pride of authorship that would say it can't be done better than this. I think it is a good and workable solution. But if you have some other ideas about modifications, I'd be happy to respond to your questions about those and to address those, either during the hearing now or at some point after if the court decides they would like more information.
Okay. During the discussion, I thought I understood Justice Abrahamson to ask a question. This is the way I understood it. If during the process at some time your retained counsel said you shouldn't go forward on this, what was the answer? Are you able to do that? And how do I get that from the rule?
Today, under our current rule, I would then dismiss that allegation. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, over the course of the last 2 years, there have been 380 of those instances where a count has been dismissed after it's been charged voluntarily by OLR, because as we go through discovery, as we learn other information, we learn that we can no longer substantiate the charge. And so we make an evidentiary call and we dismiss it, and I have always thought that OLR had that discretion. That is not something that is specifically addressed by this petition. This petition is designed to address the situations in the rules where we are making decisions at our intake process and when we're making decisions at the end of a formal investigation or after the PRC's finding of cause to proceed, during the PRC's finding of cause to proceed, as well as the special investigators and review panel. It's those instances that currently in the rule use the word shall and the current definition of cause to proceed. Or they use the phrase misconduct, which is defined really as a violation of the rules. So any violation, no matter what it is, would be something that there is the word shall in our investigative and intake processes that we're trying to address with this petition. So it's increasing the level of discretion to allow us to use it earlier, but it would not really change the exercise of discretion during litigation.
Once a case is commenced, if your retained counsel who has received instruction that he or she should ask for 120 days of discipline, of suspension, comes back to you and says, I think it ought to be 60 days. Do you have discretion then?
Oh, of course. Yeah, there's nothing in the rule that really limits OLR's discretion in recommending a sanction.
Why have your retained counsel told me that once that discipline has been set, they have no room to maneuver?
They have room to maneuver, but they abide by the decision that we make at OLR to do that. So we do consider it after the complaint is filed, and we do make modifications to that. when we look at the court's precedent in similar cases, then we do make changes to that. But when they come to see you at an oral argument, we've already considered that, and we've decided to hold to the recommendation.
You're talking about when it's going before the referee.
Before the referee, we would probably have a discussion about it with our counsel then. And the counsel would say, referee is saying this, or I've got some new information, or I, as your lawyer, recommend you do this. And then we go back, we take that into consideration, we look at the court's precedent, and then we tell the retained counsel what our position is. And then that's the position that I expect the counsel to take.
And when you say we, does that mean you?
It means me, and it means not just me. I mean, it's not just the decision I make, although I ultimately make it. I am responsible for it, but it's done in consultation with that counsel, done in consultation with the supervisor, our litigation counsel. But, yes, it's my decision, yes.
Now, the various factors that are outlined in your petition to be considered if in deciding not to go forward, you don't want those articulated. Is that right?
Articulated as part of the rule. And the reason is that I think that circumstances or new information or changes in policy might be appropriate at some point. I want to be able to do that without having to file a petition to allow us to consider other factors we either haven't thought of or we've decided after some deliberation ought to be included. It allows for discretion in how we exercise discretion a little bit, yes. But it's, again, under review in the context of every case. And it is under review as a matter of policy by the BAO, and it is a matter of review by this court in the decisions it makes in its cases and in our meetings.
You quote from a report here. We believe that disciplinary counsel can and should dismiss minor violations without diversion if circumstances warrant, e.g., the attorney acknowledges the violation and the violation has caused no harm. Whether you put that officially in the rule or whether you put that in a comment, there is kind of a suggestion here. If someone acknowledges the violation, there is a greater opportunity that there's going to be that you won't proceed. It seems to me I'm looking at a criminal context.
Sure. Yes.
We're in the police station. Somebody is in custody. Don't the police always say, "We really want to hear your story. We ought to want to help you here." I'm wondering if there shouldn't be some greater guidance about how you make the decision where you acknowledge wrongdoing, because you don't really know whether it will or won't be used against you.
It's hard to answer that question. I don't have a good answer for that question. I don't know a way that you could regulate that in a way that would be clear. It would provide guidance to everybody more than you do now. Second, I would tell you that goes on right now. In our diversion programs, we have this ability to divert minor violations, and that frequently depends on an analysis of factors that are listed in 22.10(4). But part of that then creates the same kind of issue, and that would be, is someone telling me this simply to get a diversion versus a private reprimand? And do they have some kind of promise it's going to be that? And it's only one of the factors that should be considered. If I steal $10,000 from a client and OLR finds out and I come say, "I'm really sorry," and I give it back, I'm not sure that, Detective Prosser would be overly impressed with that. And on the other hand, it's just, I don't know, as the person who's being investigated at that point, what effect it will have. It always tends towards mitigation, no matter what the violation is, throughout the whole spectrum of cases that come to us. So if we're encouraging lawyers to acknowledge and recognize misconduct when it has occurred, we do take that to account at all stages, and I think it affects your decisions, it affects our decisions in terms of sanction. It's a mitigating factor under the ABA standards, which we look to also. But it's just going to be part of the, I think, the flow of cases, part of the way that the work gets done. It's going to be a tactical call by that lawyer regarding what to say, albeit we do tell them to tell us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in our rule, in our non-cooperation rule. So I would expect candor from attorneys generally. I believe that we see generally that we get candor from attorneys, and they are very cooperative with our process, except in the very rare cases that you see. But generally, in the course of grievances, we haven't seen a huge problem there, but I do recognize that that's going to be part of the strategies that are going to go on during some of these processes. Absolutely.
My final question is, if the court were to decide to move forward on a comprehensive review of OLR rules, should we adopt this petition now?
Absolutely, right. this stand 1407, there are other things that we're thinking about in terms of improvements to the system. Regardless of whether the court does a study or not, I would want the court to continue to make the improvements that we know to make at this point.
You know, Mr. Saleen, I appreciate you bringing this petition, and I appreciate your emphasis on accountability. And one of the issues that I'm going to raise, I think, would fall loosely under the category of accountability. And more precise discussion of it is probably more appropriate under the context of the next petition. But it's something that I think, in fairness, I ought to at least raise, not only with you, but in front of all my colleagues and those who are interested. One of the things that's helpful to me, let me back up. When I was a prosecutor and when I was a circuit court judge, one of the most, probably the most difficult part of my job was, as a prosecutor, recommending the correct sentence, and as a circuit court judge, imposing the correct sentence in the bigger cases. And one of the things that I find helpful within the OLR context in my present position is when I'm provided with similar cases that have been disposed of with similar consequences. So at least we can put a reason, we can, other than our subjective ideas of what's the correct response, we can point to other similar cases that have been disposed of similar. And here's where it starts to get difficult. I am in favor of increased discretion for you and for OLR. Let's just say that, which is true. But in the same breath, I'd be interested in seeing some kind of procedure available to both lawyers who are under investigation and or have been charged, as well as those who represent them, and frankly, the court, for knowing how similar cases have been diverted or dismissed. I understand it's tricky because as a prosecutor, we had an open file policy, but people weren't necessarily aware of all the cases that were not charged or were diverted through some other diversionary program or were dismissed upon further investigation or whenever. But I think it would be helpful, for obvious reasons, for lawyers to know, lawyers who are being investigated and or charged, gee, am I the only one who's been charged? And if so, why? It seems to me that would help with the goal of accountability. It would also, quite frankly, help the bar be on equal footing with OLR. And I think it would help the members of the court to understand the process better and to be able to best judge like cases in a like fashion. I know that's going to be tricky, but it's something I've been thinking about within the context of OLR for some time, and I don't know exactly how to address it but it is something that I would at least ask you to take under consideration. If you happen to have any thoughts in response to it now, that's fine. I'm not expecting a detailed and precise response, though.
I appreciate the suggestion. I think it is something that the board and our office should talk about. It is not something that I have thought about or prepared.
Sure.
I appreciate
Thanks.
The suggestion.
Thank you.
Anything further?
Not for me. Subject to your questions, Chief.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Attorney Dietrich, you will come forward, please.
May it please the court.
Yes.
Just a sec, Mr. Dietrich.
I'm sorry.
Attorney
what was that,
Dietrich?
Mr. Dietrich?
Attorney
My name.
Just 1 second. Justice Brooks is going to continue to watch these hearings on Wisconsin Eye. They're over there, so we can give him a high five from his chambers. So he's left, but he's not left you totally. He's just going to watch them in a different venue. Thank you. You can proceed now.
A representative of the Ethics Committee of the State Bar of Wisconsin. And I wanted to make that very clear. I want to thank you for the opportunity to present to you today on Petition 1406. And I also want to thank you for taking the time to look very seriously at this issue. I believe that the content of the petition, what has been regarding a more clear understanding of what the extent of discretion being considered is very important to the future of the proceedings and the process before the Office of Lawyer Regulation. I come here today very supportive of the proposed changes. I, too, felt they did not go far enough, but I present that as a respondent counsel, and I could understand why it might not go as far as I would like it to go.
Far enough in what way? Far enough in what way?
It was not clear to me, and I think it did become clear from these discussions, that discretion could be exercised at various levels in the proceeding.
Including at the referee stage.
At the referee stage, or frankly, I mean, not very, very seldom does it occur after the referee stage. But
well, when it comes here, the OLR files briefs as to whether it supports the referee or not. So there might be discretion there, too.
Yes, there have been instances where I worked with OLR counsel to resolve things before it goes to complete process. But I really have struggled with how do I present the importance of this issue to you. And I have a couple of words that I think, I hope are not offensive. But I'm going to use them because I haven't come up with a better way to describe my concern. I understand that their position is once a proceeding has gone before the preliminary review committee, there is not much of any opportunity when a decision is made by the preliminary review committee. But I believe that that has resulted in what I would characterize as piling up. Now, again, that's from my perspective as a respondent's counsel. And the response has been you can't exercise discretion after action is taken by the preliminary review committee. I really think that this to put the, all the appropriate language in a letter of engagement, I believe, is another error. I will tell the court that it's trying very hard to educate lawyers on what needs to be in those fee engagement letters. People take the time to read different articles of this one. Those types of cases, different types of issues with communication with a client and turning the file over. These are the types of things that I believe have been subject of divergent agreements, but at times they have been included in part of an overall complaint against the lawyer. And what I think is important is to litigate the importance of
Mr. Diedrich, as I hear the discussion, the OLR agrees there should be more discretion. I agree that there should be more discretion, and as I've read opinions of this court in OLR matters and have listened to discussions on the bench and at a council table, many people here, if not everyone, agrees there should be an exercise of discretion, at least as I understand it. We're going to find out later if that's true. My difficulty with the proposal is that it's not clear to a respondent counsel. It's not clear to me as a reader of it what's involved. And you started out saying you didn't quite, you're for discretion, but you didn't know precisely what this proposal gets to without listening to the discussion here for, what is it, a half hour. And it's, you know, this discussion doesn't follow the rules. The rules amount to about 20 words difference, and I don't know that they can carry it. So isn't there a better way of saying that the OLR has discretion? In from the very beginning and intake to the very end, and to exercise that discretion. I mean, obviously you can't say it precisely as I've said it, but there should be an easy way to say, thou shalt have discretion.
Justice, I will make it difficult on behalf of trying to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I understand that this issue, and I understand that the conversations that have been ongoing for the past, at least in 2 years in my view, are all trying to balance the directive from the court that this is not, discretion is not supposed to be exercised in the form of what I would call the traditional criminal plea bargain.
Okay.
If someone has violated the rules, there shouldn't be a this for that. And so when I proceed with discussions with OLR retained counsel or OLR in-house counsel, I know that I cannot do a this for that.
Mm-hmm.
I can talk about what I think is, But I can talk about where I think it's a technical violation. I can talk about where I think this is something that's easily corrected. I can talk about, frankly, how I can educate the client as to how to do this right. And I think the trouble is that if we try and deal with just discretion, we get to resist for that. And it may not be
counsel, responding counsel on the other side. It may be the self-represented person that is going to be pushing to this for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that just goes to show how difficult this is.
Right.
It just goes to show that adding 20 words, I didn't do a body count on this, adding 20 words still leaves you with the relationship of discretion, or these 20 words, which are intended as discretion, and a plea negotiation. I understand that. But
there may be a difference between discretion and plea negotiation if you define what we're talking about, like de minimis, technical, remediated, single event rather than repeated pattern, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know that I put them in a rule, but I sure would put them in a comment so you can tell people what we're talking about. There is no comment here.
Pardon?
There is no suggested comment here.
Right, right.
Okay.
And I certainly want to help with that process. I'm very concerned about putting those factors into the rule. And my reason for that is that in most settings, the effort will be to shoehorn yourself into one of those rules. And sometimes, that justifies a
sure.
dismissal or a withdrawal of a charge.
I can think of a case you handled where it was just terribly unusual fact situation. It wasn't de minimis. It wasn't technical. But you could either find there wasn't a violation or you could say that there should be no discipline. Either way. So I agree with that. And, you know, usually when we draft, we say including but not limited to. But we don't say but not limited to, but we just say including. That's what distresses me about this proposal. It doesn't distress me about the proposal, the language here that doesn't say what we're doing.
And the only response I could have, Justice, is I sure would encourage the court to take the first step. And it may be that the first step is taken and some degree of discretion is exercised. And perhaps, I shouldn't be saying this at this point, but perhaps through a further study committee, it could be rounded out and clarified.
Well, in the next proposal, you submitted a letter that indicated that there should be a study committee as to the exercise of discretion. And that was supplementary, as I read your letter, to any committee that's set up to discuss, to review the rules of procedure and the code. Now, why is it you think that there should be a committee to look at the exercise of discretion? I found it interesting that the Board of Administrative Oversight asked the same question of Keith Saleen at its meeting.
The reason that I feel that that should be reviewed further is because the ability to give guidance or, again, term language, to flush out the decision-making process, I think would be helpful to the Office of Lawyer Regulation. Please understand, again, I speak as Respondents' Counsel, who is clarify how we can come together with OLR counsel to either resolve the matter or, for my view, to crystallize that we're really arguing over the important pieces of the case.
Well, you could have the OLR report in general terms, its exercise of discretion. It could report in fiscal year 2016, we did not go forward with an investigation after intake on the following types of matters. We exercised our discretion after the PRE reported that we did not, in our complaint, assert the following charges. With the OLR lawyer, we decided not to proceed on X number of charges, like so forth down the list.
I think that would be
would read that and say, well, if I don't have to worry about the language I put in my letter of engagement, is so huge, and to what degree those can be subject to diversion agreements or decisions on how far you're going to push the envelope. So I understand the need for that communication. As I understand the need to understand what cases did not go forward, it helps in the advising process. I spent a lot of time looking at
I think Mr. Dietrich, it helps in several areas. It helps with accountability. It helps to put the bar. It helps put the court all on equal footing. And with all due respect, the percentage of the likelihood that attorneys throughout the state are reading so carefully, or a large percentage of them, with an eye toward how can I take advantage of the worst practices, I appreciate your efforts to be comprehensive in your comments, but I think frankly, the chance of that is far outweighed by the benefit of people who are being charged to have equal knowledge. And this brings me to the question I've been waiting to ask you. You've indicated you've used the phrase piling on a couple of times. You've been representing respondents in these matters for about how long? Okay, hundreds, thousands of clients? All right, hundreds. Why do you think the piling on occurs?
I know for a fact that part of, not to say 100%, I unfortunately have to say great majority of it is because the case is brought forward to the PRC with that. That they feel obligated to bring forward all of the claims where legitimately they believe there's a violation of the rule. And once the preliminary review committee has said, yes, we believe you should go forward, that there's cause to proceed, there is no option right now to not proceed with it.
Okay, because when I hear the phrase piling on, what I go back to is a few years ago when I started out as an assistant district attorney, I remember being told by the attorney who supervised me to the effect, we don't just charge battery, we charge battery, disorderly conduct, all along the lines. Because if he doesn't plead out to one, he'll plead out to the other, or if we don't get a conviction on one. And I look back and I wish I would have questioned that more. I don't know how fair that is. That's what I think of when I think of piling on. I think of a misuse of government resources to force a conviction down the system. Period. You see any of that?
I do feel I see that. I do not feel I see it on a regular basis. I do feel it's an advocacy system. I understand.
Sure.
Our counsel,
reasonable minds can disagree. Well, that's once we have the opportunity to talk about it. That's why I enjoyed my conversation with Mr. Saleen in this context a few minutes ago, and I'm enjoying this opportunity because these are very serious issues, as you've noted, and I tend to agree with you that this is a good first step, and I don't think it's the complete step, and I think there are other issues to be addressed to make sure that there's not only the appearance of fairness, but fairness in fact. And so that probably, go ahead, sir.
Yeah. to respond further when you talk about the notion of accountability.
Yes.
Very often when that lawyer that's being prosecuted sees the serious but also rather questionable or mundane charge, their view of accountability or credibility is affected.
Yes. I like the word you've used a few times, which is to crystallize, to distill the issue into what the heart of the issue is. And anyway, I appreciate your comments. I appreciate your comments, especially in the context of your experience in these matters on all sides. And it's a conversation that won't end today, and I'm looking forward to more. So thank you.
One of the problems that you pointed out is the interrelationship of various provisions here, so that you have a lot of citations to rules, and the rules are overlapping to some extent. Rule one overlaps a little with two, and violation of one can affect two, blah, 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 right? And if they have to go to the PRE and they go in with every rule violation and come out with a probable cause finding, then they can exercise discretion about the complaint. But I don't know if the OLR has the power to add a charge that PRE hasn't found probable cause. That's right. That's my understanding. So the reason they bring this whole litany of charges before PRE is to give them the ability to go forward with any number of them, depending on what the ultimate investigation shows they have evidence on. And if they don't bring them, they're barred. So that's what I mean by the interrelationship of all of these provisions.
Trust the count cases.
Yeah. It's going to be more complex with this electronic banking, I think. It was for another day, but the complexity is there when I read it.
But there have been certainly many cases where one wrong act has been charged under four or sometimes more provisions of the trust account. Mm-hmm.
That's why the Greeson report said don't zero in on a particular charge necessarily or every single charge, but is there any one of them that's go forward? And then both the Greeson report and preceding report in February 12 by the Banachek Committee said, hey, what's missing here is open communication between the investigators and litigation staff. I don't know if that caught your eye in the February 12th. So, I mean, all these become terribly interrelated.
They certainly do, Justice, and I'll just explain so that you at least see it from my perspective. I believe I need to be very respectful of the investigator that I'm working with. And so any discussion I would have regarding where's the case going, what are the pieces, why are the charges, I feel that
that professionally I should work through the investigator, who at that stage is my contact person. Sometimes that gets to counsel, sometimes it doesn't get to counsel. And that's, you know, I think that the Office of Lawyer Regulation is really trying to deal with that. But there's got to be a chain of command, too. I can see some people tend to move outside the chain of command very quickly because of either their reputation or what they believe is their reputation. And I don't think that's appropriate. Mm-hmm.
Just for clarification, I heard at the beginning of your comments some reference to you were informed by listening to the questions and answers that preceded your appearance that maybe there is more flexibility in earlier communication than you had thought. I'm not sure if I heard you correctly in saying that. Is that your perception?
That's basically correct. If I could expand, Justice, what I do understand is the importance that Mr. Saleen has placed upon the definition of cause to proceed, and that carries through to other rules when they're making decisions at various stages in the ORRC. Much of the rule less about investigation, and then it talks about special prosecutor cases, which don't happen very much. But I, from my able to listen as much as I could, I have more comfort that the concept in this petition of discretion extends further. It may not go all the way to decisions on whether or not to appeal a case by OLR to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, but I think there's more breadth based upon how you interpret the definition of cause to proceed and where it is.
Did you understand that currently, not the proposed petition, but currently there is ample ability to have earlier communications? I'll tell you where I'm headed with this. And this, I thought to myself, and perhaps I misunderstood you, that's why I wanted clarification. But I thought, when I read your letter, I put earlier communications. You want earlier communications between OLR counsel. You made reference to before or during the period of time before OLR decides to commence an investigation. And then a little later in your letter, you talked about the period of time before they file a complaint, that you wish there were earlier opportunities for investigation. I thought I heard from your comment that now you understand there is, not in the petition, but there is. And what went through my mind is this, I said to myself, for heaven's sakes, if Dean Dietrich doesn't know there's currently an earlier opportunity for conversation, then who would? You know, because of your 20 years of experience in this area. So just help me with clarifying that.
I believe during the course of an investigation, my contact person should be the investigator. And quite often the investigator is not going to be willing to talk about whether or not this particular potential charge should be pursued or not. I am not in a position to discuss with that or retain counsel some way of looking at a resolution or some way of looking at, gee, maybe this case, this part of the case doesn't need to go.
Did you understand by this morning's comments, however, that may be possible currently, or are you not sure by this morning's comments? Because I have the impression, as I thought that you did, that is that no discretion after the PRC has been a complaint. Yeah.
I have to, again, be candid, Justice. It's happened, but it requires a great deal of advocacy to get it
done. Okay.
So I can't say it doesn't happen. It does, but you need to be very, very diligent in making that happen.
I don't see anything in this proposal that deals with your communication with anyone. This communication only says they have discretion. I mean, that's what it's intended to say. How they exercise that discretion is totally within their discretion. There is nothing in here that says they got to talk to you at all, ever.
The connection, Justice, is that if I know that they have that discretion, I'll have more communication.
Yeah, you're going to call, but they don't have to. They can just say, hey, we're going ahead. See you in court. See you before the referee. They're going ahead. See you in the Supreme Court. This is nothing to deal with. It's just if they have discretion, you think you're going to get a shot at their exercise. Okay.
I tried to have those conversations. And I don't mean this in a negative way, but what's saying given to me in response is, well, at this stage in the process, we can't do that. I'm not bad for talking with her. It's productive. I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. We thank you for the opportunity. It's not a simple short drive from Warsaw into Madison.
It was an easy 3 drives.
I'm sure. 2.5 hours.
Attorney Schweitzer. Following Attorney Schweitzer will be Judge Charles Dykeman, so you know who's up next. Please proceed.
Thank you, Justice. Justices of the Court, thank you for the opportunity to appear and speak. I have little, if anything, to add to Mr. Saleen's, Mr. Dietrich's comments, but I wanted to add the perspective of a referee in attorney discipline cases and to give you the opportunity to ask any questions you might have of me. I will say that I presented a letter to the court. I'll repeat what I said there briefly. I do support the petition. I approve the idea of giving OLR discretion. I worked as an assistant district attorney for a few years, beginning of my career. I wrote an article on plea bargaining at what was then called the Wisconsin Bar Bulletin. I am not suggesting that OLR should engage in what we typically call plea bargaining, but I am saying that as a practical matter, most of the cases in the DA's office were disposed of without a trial. That involved changing charges, which I would not recommend. It involved negotiating the outcome, which I think is a possibility here, and it involved dismissing cases, which the district attorney felt were inappropriate. Justice Gableman, I will say that that the district attorney in my county had a very firm policy that no OWI charges would ever be dismissed. And I ran up against one case where I had disagreed on that one. So that's off the topic. I will, having said that, I will just say that I am in favor of the idea anticipated by the court in its written letter to Mr. Saleen on July 7th, which was that the rule should include, either in the rule itself or a comment to be created, a list of the possible criteria that could be considered for deciding not to investigate or further prosecute a grievance. And the list could be prefaced by including, but not limited to. And that's all I have to say.
Mr. Schweitzer, you're referring to, and I'm referring to, your letter of August 10th.
Yes.
Which all of the court has under tab 8 in its book. And I agree with you that the OLR should have more discretion in prosecuting attorney disciplinary matters. Then your third paragraph says, I think it would be appropriate and possibly useful to include in the rule the criteria for deciding not to investigate a grievance. What do you really mean is prosecute from I did. Any stage.
I did not mean to change the meaning of that. Yeah,
that's what I thought, and that's one of my issues with how this is drafted now. That's why I got.
Thank you for the clarification.
And that's good. So, do you have any other? You suggest that either include in the rule or in a comment what exactly you're talking about. That is what the discretion is.
I think that was listed in your letter, was it not?
Yeah.
To
and the
Mr.
Answer
Saleen?
Was, right, Mr. Saleen.
I didn't think
said
of
no.
additional language for that, no.
Okay, thank you. Oh, thank let you. Me just say, you have been a ref. I want to do this publicly. I've done it privately a number of times. You've been a referee, and you were kind enough to take the rowing oar in drafting a manual for referees, a bench book, because they don't have one, and it was suggested that that would be helpful, just like bench books are helpful for judges. And I want to thank you for doing the draft. We had a meeting with referees on the draft. It got a little stuck, but I'm hoping it will unstick. In Carla's Baumgartner's office now, so thank you.
Thank you for your continuing concern on that, and the Chief Justice has taken up that issue. I have just begun talking to Mr. Saleen and Mr. Weigel.
That's where it got stuck.
And we have a meeting set up. I believe it's October 1st. I'm glad to see that it's going to be moving forward.
Let me know where it is and when. So I can attend if I wish to.
Justice Prosser.
In your testimony, you outlined three points about you talked about charges, outcomes, and dismissals, I think mm-hmm. it was.
And oh, yes. That was when I was talking about plea bargaining in a DA's office. I mean, that's what I think of as the factors that can be negotiated in a criminal or quasi-criminal setting.
I thought I understood you to say that in the context of these attorney discipline cases, you would not dismiss charges, but there is more room for negotiation about outcome. Mm-hmm. Is that what you said?
If the first part of that, I may have misspoken or you may have misunderstood me. I did say that outcome, I would assume, would be something that could be discussed among the parties, and the dismissal of charges might be appropriate. I heard that was what Mr. Saleen said. But that would be, of course, in a situation where their investigation determined that the charge was not supported by sufficient facts. So there was a miscommunication between you and me. I did not say I wouldn't approve of the dismissal of charges in the appropriate case.
Well, the appropriate case may be technical, too. It may be that there's absolute support that there's been a violation of the trust account rule, but that the trust account rule that's being violated is very...
We're using the phrase de minimis.
That's right.
To characterize much
right.
of this.
And I you would get rid of it.
Accept that as part of the right. OLR's discretion, just as an efficient way of running its office.
Maybe it might be a little bit dense this morning, but forgive me. If I think there's an acknowledgement that when there is misconduct, it might violate multiple rules.
Frequently does.
It really doesn't look very good when an attorney is found by the referee and by the court to have violated six rules when it's really only one or two events. It seems to me if you're going to get 60 days, whether you violated three rules or six rules, and the outcome is the same, I'm not so sure I wouldn't feel comfortable about negotiating down the number of offenses. Why am I wrong?
I wouldn't say you're wrong. I gather you're positing a situation where there is a major violation. Let's say completely ignoring a responsibility to a client. But that involves questions not only of communication, but of competence, maybe of not having done informed consent. So indeed, there may be six separate rule violations. I would hope that as a referee or as a prosecutor, they would see whether that is one major violation, which involves a number of rules, or whether it is multiple or separate violations. And then in the process of recommending an outcome, to focus on the magnitude of the issue, and without counting the number of violations. Is that a responsive answer?
I'd like to follow up, however, because my understanding of Justice Prosser's question indicating what you were putting forth is the same that I thought you were putting forth. And now let me see if I've got this right. That is, I understood you to say that you would not be supportive of changing charges from, if you put it to the criminal,
battery to disorderly conduct.
That's exactly it. You're not in favor of that, but you are in favor of discussion and changes regarding the outcome. I take that to be the disposition. And that would also include dismissal of some charges. That's what I understood you to say. Those are the three things. Doesn't mean that I understood correctly or Justice Prosser understood correctly or that's what you want to say. I just want to get that.
You put me into an area that I've always felt a little uncomfortable about also. Let's talk about dismissal. Dismissal is, in a sense, a change of charge from one thing to another. In the context of today's hearing, we are using the phrase de minimis. And if OLR or a reviewing organization truly believes that a violation is de minimis, however we're going to define that, I'm willing to accept that as a proper outcome as long as OLR feels the attorney is responding properly, and for the efficiency of the office. The OLR simply can't prosecute everything. So that, as I said, I'm a little uncomfortable about. However, as an assistant district attorney, I was always uncomfortable with the simple idea that in order to get a person to plead guilty to this, we'll reduce the charge from one level to another, because I didn't accurately reflect what had happened.
Although it could be disorderly conduct and battery.
It could. I would prefer not to dismiss the battery just to get the disorderly conduct. If
I
the battery
understand
were
that's
justified.
Motivation, but it could be both, right?
Yes, indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Judge Steichman?
My name is Charles Dykeman, and I live in Monona, Wisconsin, and I'm a member of the Wisconsin Bar. I should, before I begin, explain that I am a member of the VAO, and that in some ways I've been educated in this area because of that. I also had the opportunity fairly recently to represent a respondent in an OLR complaint because that is at a stage where I have just filed proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law. I do not want to go into any of the facts of that case.
This is before a referee, then?
This is before a referee.
Okay.
It is. When I first took this case, and I took it later in the proceeding than my client should have hired me, I thought, having never done one of these, that I would treat this as I treated misdemeanors when I was in the practice of law. So I approached the attorney, who was a private attorney for OLR, and gave him a pitch that this matter should not go further and we should agree to whatever it was that I asked to be agreed to.
Under OLR terminology, this is litigation counsel.
Litigation counsel.
Outside litigation counsel rather than inside.
Okay.
Right? Is that right?
I think
it wasn't
that's
a member
correct.
Of the staff. Okay.
And that will be the subject of one of my comments. So I was told that that wasn't going to happen because OLR looked very, well, did not want to be doing that sort of thing. Now, that was surprising to me because I, at that point, had just gotten into the case, and I thought that there should be some way to go about handling a case. And so I asked, and this is a well-known, well-respected attorney. I have great faith in this attorney for doing the right thing. So
has he represented OLR in other cases?
Yes.
Experienced litigation counsel.
In fact, I think many times. So I posed this of another very experienced and well-respected attorney as an aside in another matter we were talking about. And his comment was, well, back some time ago, OLR was subject to an article or articles in one of the Milwaukee papers criticizing the fact that lawyers were being given an easy out in these matters and that as a result of that, the procedure had changed. Now, those are two attorneys. I'm one attorney. And I was much impressed by Attorney Dietrich's comments about all of the cases that he had handled. So I was surprised that this would be the reasoning. So I had to proceed, and I did, and we had a hearing, and in fact, I have to file my proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law this afternoon. So I think that this is not an impression that, in my view, attorneys and people within the system ought to have. I think that there should be more discretion. Now, had the retained counsel told me that he could not do that because of SCR 2210, which allows diversion during an investigation at the conclusion of if the director determines, etc. And at least I interpret that as meaning that discretion ceases once the investigation is concluded.
It says at intake, during an investigation, or at the conclusion of an investigation.
Yes.
The director blah.
Yes. The director and the director determines director may offer.
Right. Diversion.
Mm-hmm. Right. I do not interpret that. I interpret that as stopping at the conclusion of the investigation.
Do you interpret the proposed change as changing that provision?
No.
No, because it doesn't affect it at all.
It doesn't affect it at all. And indeed, moving into that issue, I read the word a possible in SCR 220016C and 2203, all of these, in which the term is now a recommended term is a possible finding of cause to proceed. Now, all attorneys know that there's a big difference between possibilities and probabilities, and my conclusion was that a possible finding is not much, and that if there needs to be more discretion, then that should be changed to something between possibility and probability, which I don't know the word for. So I tossed in what probably is a weasel word, and that is a reasonable probability. But something which is a little more than just a possibility, because that, I think, almost includes anything. And I think I have heard many times people say, well, anything is possible. So for this particular, what I'm doing is, first of all, suggesting something that is collateral to this petition, but secondly, and that is a greater ability to use discretion and a higher standard. At any rate, that is pretty much my comment on SCR 2003. And I think it's interesting that I've been told that in Colorado, increased diversion lowered the time that Colorado had to complete investigations. And I think that is beneficial. I think that there should be an examination of whether all of these matters should be handled by in-house counsel or perhaps district attorneys. I think that at least to solve an initial problem without going into a lengthy rewrite of the entire code, I think the court could issue something like it did in In Re Court of Appeals, in which this was I don't really want to use the word ipsy-dixit because that's got negative connotations, but at any rate, in which the court itself determined that something had to be done and did it.
I don't understand that.
Pardon?
I don't understand what you're suggesting. Oh.
What I'm suggesting is that the court, on its own motion, could issue an opinion much like In Re Court of Appeals, in which the court explains that more discretion is necessary. Now, that isn't a rule, and it's very hard. It's one thing to say that John Decker is appointed the chief judge of the Court of Appeals in Re Court of Appeals. So another thing to say there should be more discretion in the work that is done by OLR.
But you favor more discretion?
I do.
Do you think the proposed language does that for you?
No. I don't think it does.
You didn't understand the proposed language to do that. What did you understand?
Pardon?
Did you understand the proposed language to give you more discretion, to give OLR more discretion?
I don't think that language gives more discretion. I think more discretion can be given. I haven't come up with the language of a rule that I would suggest to the court. And I think a collegial group of seven persons probably does a better job than just one person. So that is what I would like to see. In addition, because I have to file these proposed findings and conclusions this afternoon, and I may not be able to continue with the 01 petition, if I'm not out of bounds, I would like to suggest that whatever the court does with that, it is, in my view, very important to have attorneys who have represented respondents in OLR petitions.
You're talking about 1501 now.
Yes, I am, but this isn't that.
You want to be excused from staying because you want to get your stuff in, right?
Justice Abramson, I'm sorry, but in the last 5 years, I've had more trouble hearing.
Okay. You want to leave before we hear 1501?
Yes, because I would, first of all, when that appeared before the BAO, I abstained from that. Then I wanted to say that whatever is done, I think it's really important for the reasons that Attorney Dietrich and what I believe I have seen, that the view of people who are doing this actual work is vitally important if there's going to be a committee or group or whatever.
Have you filed any kind of written statement in regard to 1501?
I have not.
Okay. You will have the opportunity to do that. But I can't have you go on about 1501 now because there are other people that have signed up to speak on that. So we really need to conclude this matter and then move forward. But if you file written comments, we would very much appreciate it.
I will do that, and I recognize that I'm taking up other people's time with irrelevancies.
Your suggestion is in a written form that they should add respondent counsel.
Yes.
As well as OLR counsel. So that's before the court, just to reassure you.
I'm going to take down that language and put it in anything that I write.
That's fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody that I have not called on who is here to speak on petition 1406? Mr. Saleem, do you have any comments that you'd like to add at the conclusion? Okay, very good.
I have a question. What's your response to Judge Dykeman's comments in two regards? Number one, that changing the language of possible finding to something a little higher than possibility. And number two, his comment that he didn't think the language gives more discretion, but he doesn't have proposed language. So those two comments, if you will.
Thank you, Justice Bradley. with regard to the term possible finding, that term is the term that's currently in the rule, which I say to you only to explain why I used it in the new rule. A reasonable probability, I think, would provide some additional discretion, and it is an acceptable term to me, but it would probably result in more closures at intake, and we would be accepting a little bit more risk at intake than we do right now, that we would be closing matters where there is a violation.
He advanced the example of Colorado making greater use of diversion and that allows for more expeditious handling overall. Do you know what the language employed by Colorado is in this regard?
Colorado has the ability in its diversion rule to divert matters where the normal sanction that's appropriate would be a public reprimand. And so in Wisconsin, we have, as one of our factors in Rule 22.10, that the normal appropriate discipline should not exceed a private reprimand.
So the Colorado language does not implicate this possibility, reasonable probability per se. They just take a different tact in order to have more flexibility and discretion at the front end.
Mrs.
Am I
Bradley,
correct?
I don't know. I would have to review the language to answer that question.
Okay, thank you. And the second comment was he didn't think the language of the current, as I understood his comment, he didn't think the language of the petition gives more discretion. Is there a way to remedy that, or do you disagree with
it? No, I do disagree with it, because when we change the definition of cause to proceed and introduce those discretionary factors, then we have some ability to close or dismiss cases that we do not, as I understand the current rules, because it defines what I shall do in terms of misconduct, and here it would be misconduct that warrants discipline. So that allows me to exercise discretion where I would not be able to before in these instances of de minimis violations where the criteria would suggest we should not proceed.
Is there any benefit to using the word, either in a comment or in the rule, the word discretion? Or you think that's, apparently you think that's not necessary or beneficial with regard to the actual language chosen in the draft petition?
I don't think it's necessary. It may be beneficial. But at this point, the person who would be really concerned about this would be the grievant, the person who filed the grievance. And at this point, having that definition warrants discipline, and having some factors at least that we use and that we have submitted to you at least publicly that we will consider, it allows me then to talk to a grievant to say, yes, I do believe there is a violation here. You're right about that. But for these reasons, we don't think it's appropriate to exercise investigative authority or a prosecutorial authority, and then have a discussion about that. There would be a review of that under both the intake process and before the preliminary review committee if it was done after an investigation. So I think it's very appropriate to do that. And one of the frustrations is frequently that a grievance says, well, this is a violation. And right now we tell them, well, if it is, we proceed, but it's not. So we already have those discussions anyway, but it would be a little bit different now. And I think in some cases, it would actually help a grievant feel better about the process that they knew we were exercising discretion as long as we would then tell them, look, we think there is a violation. I can't have that kind of discussion with a grievant now because, one, we would be moving forward on a violation, but, two, frequently we just disagree about it. And now I can just be honest about that in that discussion. Look, you know, you're right, but or even if you are right, you know, we should not proceed anyway. And I think that would be helpful in those discussions that they have a little bit more information from us about what we're doing and why as it relates to those conversations.
So if you dismiss a grievance and the grievance said, look, black and white, there's been a violation of rule, whatever it is.
Okay.
Why did you do that, Mr. Saleem?
They would get an answer that relates to those criteria. I would just tell them.
In a writing, you would say, right, there was a violation here, mm-hmm. but we have exercised our discretion not to prosecute because.
Yes.
And then you would use whatever the discretion was in that particular case.
Yes.
And they'd say, where do you get that from?
I would have the language in the rule that's in the proposal that warrants discipline. I would have that in cause to proceed, and then I would relay the factors that we are applying.
Okay. But they're not in the rules.
Correct. That's correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Thank you very much. That closes the testimony on 1406. We're going to proceed right away with 1501 with the hopes that some of you all who have come and waited so patiently will be able to comment on it.
The presenter is Justice Abrahamson, and I don't know how you want to proceed. Are you going to talk from up here? Are you going to get down there at the microphone? What's your pleasure?
I got a microphone here. I can do it, and I'm going to be as brief as I can so that we can hear from the people who registered and sent comments and those who are here. I proposed 1501, and I had proposed it earlier in roughly the same form, but to avoid any issues of whether it's before the court or not, I reproposed it. And the court agreed to a hearing. The first thing I want to say is that we should all recognize the value of the present processes that the court set up 15 years ago to deal with lawyer regulation. And the goal then was to repair what many viewed was not functioning well enough in BAPR. And the court undertook a very long, involved study in open proceedings. We heard from the Colorado lawyers and their discipline. We heard from the American Bar Association. We heard from the American Judicature Society, the State Bar, et cetera. And I think we did a very good job, and that the OLR is a good process. And I want to repeat what has been said numerous times before by people who have looked at our process, including John Gleason in his report, that we have a very dedicated director of OLR. We have a very dedicated, hardworking staff. We have dedicated, hardworking volunteers, referees, and counsel, and their work has been excellent. It has been 15 years, and from the last hearing, there's a need to look at the process again to do a tune-up if needed. And we heard various points about that potential tune-up. And what the petition does is say, hey, every 10 years or so, court should look at whether or not committee should be set up to look at two aspects of, and I use OLR, I mean OLR and its components, the OLR staff, the PRE, the Board of Administrative Oversight, the special investigators, etc., and everything that goes into it. And so that this committee would look at both what I call the procedural matters and would look at the code of professional conduct. As to procedural matters, we've had any number of cases and discussions today about procedure, diversion, need, this is Winkle, the need for bifurcation of violation and discipline, Osika case, which talked about two separate complaints within the same time. Mr. Diedrich might call that piling on. So you have two separate proceedings and that result in two separate discipline. Yeah. Costs have been a problem, although that seems less. Delay, technical violations, improved dialogue with counsel as a process, and in the June 2015 meeting of the Board of Administrative Oversight, they talked about improved dialogue between OLR and law enforcement. All of these are procedural matters which might be looked at. I give these just as indicia or examples. In setting up this proceeding, Diane Frungen talked about a whole variety of rules petitions that deal with the processes, like 1304 relating to referees, 1305, which is still with us, relating to enforcement, 1306 relating to stipulations, 1312 relating to public notice of formal investigations, 1406, which you just heard, relating to exercise of OLR discretion. These all relate to the processes of the OLR and indicate that review of these processes is needed. Just because we appointed a committee does not mean that the court cannot act on matters that it should act on, and that might include 1406, but I give these as examples of what should be or might be looked at. The other matters that I would have a committee look at is the rules of professional conduct themselves. They have not been examined for a long time, and in the interim, the ABA, which is the basis for our present code, the ABA's suggestion, had significant revision, and Julie Rich and a student intern brought out a comparison of the newer ABA code and the Wisconsin code to see if revision might be needed. Well, since then, ABA has had a study committee. I think it's called Ethics 2020, and Dean Diedrich, I hope you'll talk about it, because it's my understanding that your committee has filed Rule 1504, or the State Bar has, which your committee is part of it, and it proposes rules changes to the Code of Professional Conduct as a result of not only 2020, but of other aspects that are peculiar, different in Wisconsin, or that Wisconsin didn't adopt the interim report. So it's 2020 plus. And that, I tried to read that for today. I read part of it. It's 63 pages of rules and comments and 20 pages of a supporting memorandum. So that tells me that my idea that we should have a study of the ABA of the Wisconsin Rules of Professional Conduct is right. Now, you might tell me that, hey, it's already been done. We don't have to do it again, but I'd like to have a committee look at that because now it's the court that has The other thing that I found interesting in relation to whether or not we need a study committee of the rules of professional conduct is I got, as many of you in the audience got, a advertisement of the State Bar of Wisconsin that they've got a webcast, I think it is, called Legal Ethics 2015, Lost in the Fog. And this is, this is the guide, this is the come on, the marketing. When it comes to legal ethics, there's no shortage of questions, but there is sometimes a shortage of answers. Legal Ethics 2015, Lost in the Fog, explores the shades of gray surrounding tough ethical questions under Wisconsin rules of professional conduct, including, et cetera. So it seems to me maybe there's a need to answer some of these gray matters. And because I think that it was needed that we look again in 2015, maybe closer to 2016, of the operations of the components of OLR, and we look at the code, that this is a good idea now. Now, I proposed a committee that I thought was objective, wouldn't have an agenda, and represented various interests. But there have been suggestions. The Department of Justice, if we appoint such a committee, wants somebody from DOJ on it. I don't have any objection. Referees, I think Mr. Schweitzer suggested that referees be on the committee. I have no objection. Another person suggested that a respondents be attorney and OLR attorneys be on it. I think I had one. They suggested two. I have no objection. Another person objected the committee was too large. Well, if they do two parts of this, it may be very well that they divide into two committees, one to study the rules, the other to discuss the practice. This gives them broad discretion as to what to do. So I propose that we do have a study, details of which can be changed from what I propose, but I do think we need diverse views. And my committee, unlike the bar committee, I think this is right, Mr. Diedrich, would have public members that would be able to talk from the public view. I always find the public has interesting and good things to say. So I'm done. I'm ready to hear from the people who have written and who have signed up.
Okay, before we go to that, do any members of the court have questions for Justice Abrahamson as the presenter of this rules petition? Okay, hearing none, I am then going to call on Ms. Claire Fowler. Ms. Fowler has served the court as a public member of many of our committees, a member of some for as many as 14 years, and has volunteered her time and her efforts for the court for so long. So we are going to take Ms. Fowler a little bit out of order today so that she can proceed with the conflict that she has later in the day. Ms. Fowler?
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, and I thank you for letting me speak before this court and on this subject. As she mentioned, after spending 14 years in the committee as a public person, I felt surrounded by lawyers, and I still am.
Can't get away from
it. That's okay, Ms. Bell.
And what I tried to do in that service was to look at the client's perspective. So whenever we were presented with a case, I tried to focus on that end of it. And I think what's happened is as this committee has matured, it also has lost its goal somewhat in that it's now very much involved with the details of how to handle lawyers. As someone who's looked at the client end of it, I think that's what our goal is to protect the clients so that the lawyer's reputation can be great. And that's what I see is kind of lacking. In fact, even in this discussion this morning, I don't think I heard the word client at all. And so we need to look at what happens to the client a little bit more. And I understand why client isn't mentioned. But in asking what the lawyer regulation office should be doing, it's to protect the client. That's the first thing that's said. So in looking at protecting the client, I saw that the delay was awful. It was really difficult for the clients to handle this delay. First of all, they didn't know what was happening. They don't know what the system is. I talk to people about OLR, and they have no clue that anything's happening at all. So it's kind of a wonderful thing that's happening, and nobody knows. So the client files a complaint, and they have no idea what's going on or what they should be doing or being represented, really. And I saw them being harmed by, let's say, a lawyer had five different complaints filed against. Well, that's a terrible thing that I saw in the preliminary review committee, where you would have many complaints. Well, first of all, the client may have experienced a lawyer not doing some things in an extended period of time where their particular problem was not being addressed. There was a delay there. And then they came into the system, and because we want to be careful, and I totally agree with that, that lawyers need to be protected as well. We can't be harming someone for no reason. But then they also experienced this delay. So I just want to emphasize how important it is to speed this up. Please, please. We need to protect the clients. The remedies are very interesting. And I, as an outside person looking at the system, and I was on the Board of Administrative Oversight first to look at the entire system and to make it fair for everyone and speedy, We had a subcommittee on the district committees, which I was on. And Dennis Sipple was the chairman of that committee. And he contacted all the district committees' chairs and found out what was happening in their districts. Nothing, hardly. Not much. And they said, gee, we'd like more work. We'd like to be able to help out in this system. Now, that was many years ago. And then it's just getting into so many careful decisions that I understand, and if I were in that position, I'd be making them too, instead of having discretion to eliminate some cases right away, to move things on much faster. So I agree with the petition. I think that needs to happen, but I also think that having some language to protect all of the people in the office from making a discretionary decision is important, too, because I really don't know, and I almost wanted to ask, what liability is there? In fact, being on the board or the PRC, what liability did I have in making some of these decisions? And I know we're protected somewhat, but, you know, you just want to be careful. I think we've become a little too careful, and I think we need to move faster. Because when I'm looking at the client, they're the ones who are really being harmed financially. And in other cases where there may have been a bad decision on citizenship, I saw some of those, and I thought, oh, my gosh. I mean, that could affect their whole family. Well, all these things affect their whole family. So there's a lot of people in the background that we need to focus on a little bit more now and then. Bring that up. I think intake should have more discretion right away. There, in order to make a decision, you need to have options. So I think if the office had more options for that discretion, okay, and maybe they need a little guidance as to how far they can go, but some of these cases could be sent for education. And I don't know if the bar does it. And so if you say you must attend bar's education on handling you know, whatever, in your office. I had also thought, I'm a member of SCORE and counsel people who are starting businesses, and that I thought lawyers could use that, especially if they're, you know, private law firm, where they just have one person or two people in their law firm and they're busy handling cases. They're not watching what's happening to all the paperwork. And so, they can use those kinds of options. So I think discretion just needs some options. Here's what you can do with helping a lawyer to not have five cases of the same kind of problem.
Ms. Fowler?
Yes?
You are on the Board of Administrative Oversight and on PRA, and you're on a district committee now?
And I'm what?
Are you on a district committee now?
No, I was called about that and to be on it, but I've never received any paperwork on it.
Okay. One, I guess from your comments, you think things are good, but they could be improved.
Absolutely.
Okay. So then the question comes for me and maybe for others. So what is the procedure to use to get improvement? One procedure is leave it all to the Board of Administrative Oversight. Because as you pointed out, they saw a problem with the district committee, they did a study, and they made recommendations. I talked about the board learning that there may be a drop in the ball between what the criminal justice system in the state knows about an attorney and conversion of funds, or thinks it knows, and what the OLR knows or thinks it knows, and maybe you need some communication. And so apparently that's going to be studied. As a result of the Vanacek committee, I think you were on the board at that time, that said, well, referees, maybe we just need fewer referees and they specialize, and they presented a petition. What I'm getting at is maybe we don't need a special committee to take an overview of it. We just should say the Board of Administrative Oversight should do it.
I agree. In fact, Ed, I was on a year after Babber.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, we also did a questionnaire out to the complainants.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How do you think it went? Yeah. And that was very enlightening.
Questionnaires were suggested, I think, by Dean Diedrich as one way of this committee that I've suggested operate. Not the only way, but one way. But what I'm getting at, do you favor setting up a committee that will take a look at the whole picture?
As long as there's public members on it.
Okay. I'm
sorry, but I have to advocate for public members.
Well, I put them on, Ms. Fowler, because I knew you'd be here if I didn't put them on. So
I know. I appreciate that.
Okay. So you don't think just leaving it to the boards as presently constituted is enough, that you think there should be some specialized focus?
You mean a committee outside of the
yes.
BAO? It could be within the BAO.
Could be.
Because I think that is their directive. They're supposed to be doing that.
Right.
Watching. The problem is that there's details that the board may not be aware of.
Right.
Systems, how this connects or what communication isn't happening or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so that should be looked at by the board, I believe, by a committee of the board. I also wanted to mention that I do feel it's important. It would be a way of speeding things up to have some of the investigations done by the district committees. And I think it's expertise that is sitting there waiting and is free, no cost. I know that there's problems with controlling the reports that come back, or having the trust that they're going to look at everything. But I think the staff in the office could then review what they send back, have a template as to what kinds of issues you want addressed or looked into by the district committees, and give them some guidance up front as to what you expect them to do. And it can be a general sense. But I think that that's sitting there ready to happen. I think the PRC should meet whenever necessary, not four times a year. Whenever there's a big case, of course, review that right away. Get that going. because what I did see is some of these really heinous cases also had several new clients coming in while their case was being investigated, and that bothered me a lot. Now, there shouldn't be any new clients coming in if there's a really, trust account problem. I don't know what the court can do, but I would also recommend that they suspend licenses more quickly in very heinous cases until the investigation is complete. And it's because of new clients coming in having the same problem.
But that's all within the discretion now of the OLR.
Right.
They have to come to the court and ask for a suspension.
Right. I just think that would speed it up a little bit if you have no new cases coming in, that prolongs being able to investigate the situation. Also, I believe there should be quicker revocation of licenses. And I know that's something that we're trying not to do, but when I see a situation where the lawyer has done terrible things and is still doing it. And the problem is that when I talk to fellow people, they don't have a really high regard of lawyers, and I keep speaking up for them. I think the system is, we're so lucky to have this system. It's fabulous. And to have a lawyer represent you is just great. But they hear some other ends of it, and then they generalize and say, lawyers are all bad. But we don't want any more fodder for them. We want them to say, yes, respected. They're cleaning house. They're really doing a great job. And I think maybe some articles in the paper would be really good about that, because the Journal has written about a lot of the lawyers that are still out there messing around. Again, the district committees. I even had one of the friends of mine that's on a district committee, a public person, and he asked, why are there district committees? He hadn't met in a year and a half. So they're out there. That's why I say I don't know if the bar uses the district committees, but there's a resource out there that's part of the diversion is to have the investigations going on by a bunch of other experts. So that's all I have.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for taking the time to come.
And thank you for the opportunity to serve. I've enjoyed it very much, and I'd be very happy to serve whatever you might have in mind.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Usually, we take a break from 12 o'clock until 1:30, but we have six other people who are signed up to speak on this petition. Judge Dykeman, I know you have a problem. Is there anybody else who signed up who could not come back at 1:30? Judge Kinney. Okay. Unless my colleagues grumble, everybody else who can come back, please come back at 1:30, and I would ask Judge Dykeman and Judge Kinney, if I had you up just for 5 minutes apiece now, you both have written materials on this, or Judge Dykeman's going to submit something and has not, would that be a help to you both? Okay, well, why don't we do that? I think we'll start with you, Judge Kinney, and I'm going to look at the clock for 5 minutes so that we can have you both give us additions, and as I said, Judge Dykeman, you can submit a writing. We'll still consider it, so if it's not here, fine, and we do have one from Judge Kinney. I thank all the other people that have signed up for permitting kind of a little out-of-order shuffle here today.
May it please the Court, Chief Justice Rogensack, Justices, is this loud enough?
Yes, oh yes.
It's funny how, as I get older, the acoustics in this room get worse. The only person whom I heard 100% of what they had to say was Justice Gableman.
Then you pretty much have it covered.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to address you regarding Rule Petition 15-01 and the operation of the lawyer discipline system in our state. Like Ms. Fowler, I believe the central problem involves the caseload backlog and the resulting potential for delay and the resulting actual delay. Of course, I am not the first individual to make this observation. Gleason and Larkin, in their report from last year, declared, the current docket is unsustainable. I don't know if the numbers have improved in the last year. I hope they have, but I don't know how they could have without some major changes. Delay is not good for anyone. I believe delay has the greatest potential to undermine the public's confidence in the lawyer discipline system. I believe Ms. Fowler is an excellent representative of the public. I have several ideas as to how better to avoid delay. I will mention a few of them. What we need are more consent resolutions. How do we do that? First, in most cases, the complaint should not set forth a specific sanction recommendation. Wisconsin is apparently one of the only states, if not the only state, that makes a specific sanctions recommendation in its attorney disciplinary complaints. That's according to my post-interview talk with Mr. Gleason and Larkin. In other states, the complaints state, we request such sanction as is reasonable and just under the circumstances. The combination of requesting a specific sanction in the charging document and the prohibition against plea bargaining charges, I can tell you, leads to many contested cases that really needn't be contested. Second, in mill run cases, strong consideration should be given to having a pre-charging conference presided over by an experienced referee. Why a pre-charging conference? Because it's not a bad idea to adhere to the idea of not dismissing or reducing charges. It's not a bad idea. We don't dismiss or reduce charges if we have a pre-charging conference at which the respondent, his counsel, counsel for the OLR, agree to what's going to be filed up front. Then there is no dismissal. There is no reduction. As it stands presently, the agency files a complaint. Maybe it's 10 counts or 50 counts. Now the charges have been filed. Absent proof problems, no charges are dismissed. Query, in the majority of cases, does it really make any difference whether a respondent admits to 25 counts or 50 counts? Justice Prosser said 6 or 3. I wrote this before I heard your remarks, but obviously it is the underlying conduct which we are concerned about and which drives the sanction. A pre-charging conference would permit greater flexibility in the filing of charges and consequently more opportunity for consent resolutions. In this regard, it would be helpful for there to be a specific reference to read-ins. In the appropriate case, charges could be dismissed, but respondents could agree, for example, to pay restitution. Why do I say that? I had a case several months back in which the attorney was charged with 50 counts of attorney misconduct. She quickly acknowledged and pleaded no contest to all 50 counts. Two more charges came down the line where they were in the system at the time the 50-count complaint was filed. She wanted to contest those. OLR said, well, we aren't going to change our recommendation. I thought that was good. I tried my darndest to get this thing resolved. Why don't we just dismiss those, call them read-ins? There was a restitution issue. Have her agree to pay the restitution. At some point, the matter got resolved. We didn't have to do another hearing. But I was told, well, there is no reference to read-ins. Okay, that's true. But we need one then, don't we? When we say piling on, I mean, 50 counts, 55 counts, is that piling on? It kind of depends on from whose perspective you're looking at it. If you're looking at it from the point of view of one of the grievances, one of the individuals who's made a complaint to the agency, they would just as soon their charge not be dismissed. Now, if there are seven counts involving the same individual, we have a little different situation. But so the issue of piling on really depends on one's perspective, I think.
Yeah. Thank you, Judge Kinney. And we have all your written comments that you've delivered to us, and I'm going to have to call the time on
That's
you.
That's fine.
I very much appreciate you taking the time to come here.
I have a question. We have your comments, and they do go to delay, and delay is one of the biggest problems. There are others. Now, you have given some suggestions for reducing delay. I gather that means you still want a committee that's going to look at it and consider your suggestions along with others. Is that right?
I mean, that was the last part that I didn't get to.
You gave some specifics, but you don't expect the court to adopt them today.
No, I don't expect the court to adopt them today, but they, for the most part, wouldn't require any rule changes. For example, the rule on initiating the action, 2211, doesn't say that the sanction recommendation has to be contained in the complaint. It says it may be. Other states don't. Why are we the outlier?
Well, then I understand that what you want, that looks at the process. It may not be a rule change, but the committee would suggest the procedure that's adopted, that the OLR is using, needs to be reconsidered and changed. So you don't necessarily have a rule change, but it's the processes
right.
that are considered. Now, when you say that what you should do is have a pre-charge conference, that reminds me of the federal system. You have a pre-charging conference, and then you decide what the charge will be. That avoids the prohibition against a prohibition or regulation of the charging. So what you're doing is putting it behind closed doors instead of open doors.
Well, you could do it either way. I wouldn't oppose the idea of having a record and a ref. That's why I say have an experienced referee there. But, you know, this whole business about plea bargaining, I think it's the prohibition or the thinking about how it's prohibited has gotten a little out of hand in Wisconsin, I have to say. I don't think other states, from talking to these other gentlemen, I don't think these other states are so fixated on it. I think the public is much more concerned about delay than they are about plea bargaining.
Thank you.
And if you want to build public confidence.
The committee will certainly discuss all of those things. Right now we're just looking at should we form a committee, should we review what's going on with OLR and also the Code of Professional Responsibilities for lawyers. So
you're just giving examples of what the committee should do.
Right.
Right. And I may be getting the cart before the horse, but I feel that this is an urgent problem. I feel that some of these things should be done before there's any committee report in 18 months. I think the agency should be made to show why they're the only state that has the recommendation and the complaint.
Thank you. Thank you. Judge Steichman, I'm going to call on you, and I'm going to try to push on you to keep it to 5 minutes, too. Otherwise, the court's not going to have a lunch break, which does not sit well with my colleagues. So please come forward.
It fits my diet.
Yeah, it may fit your diet, but other folks, it doesn't. Please come forward. So just like, 5 minutes, and the lights will go on, and let's hear what you have to say. And you can still file written comments, okay, and we would appreciate that.
I may need it. I hope I don't need the 5 minutes.
Okay.
As usual, there are a couple more things that I would add to what I said. I think first, if there's going to be a committee consisting of these people, I think that a referee ought to be part of it to put in that type of information. Secondly, and I think this may be the biggest one, is the 10-year interval. And I wonder whether an ongoing committee similar to the BAO would be a better way to go about this. And however, of course, that would mean in some way some of the material of the BAO would either be duplicated or be subsumed. So, of course, then it would be necessary to have 2-3-year terms involved. The last thing is that, as I understand this, and I could be wrong, the public can obtain information, results about what happens even in a private reprimand. I could be wrong. That means that all of this has to be very carefully done, because that will follow a young attorney for the rest of his or her life. Thank you.
Any questions of Judge Dykeman?
What 2-3-year terms are you talking about? You said there has to be 2-3-year terms.
Yes. What I'm saying is that the petition presently appoints a committee, they do their work, and they're disbanded.
Mm-hmm.
My suggestion is, would it be a good idea to have an ongoing committee? There are many of them, Judicial Commission and all kinds of others, that are ongoing. And if this were ongoing, it would be necessary to have the 2-3-year...
But you'd have some kind of term limits.
Yes.
Okay. The BAO now is staffed by the OLR. So if they want to know something, the OLR reports it. This committee would be staffed by a reporter who's disinterested, impartial, and who would present materials to the committee and such. So an ongoing committee might need ongoing staff.
Yes.
And then this kind of committee proposed in this 1501 is staffed not by the OLR. I mean, that doesn't mean they don't have input, but they don't staff it.
I agree. Okay. And my only reason for suggesting this is that what I've seen in the committees that I've been on is that problems come up all the time. And a committee whose job it is to find, to be the source for problems to be submitted, is going to hear about problems all the time.
Yeah.
And that's why this is a suggestion.
Now, what happens with problems now is they come to this court and rules petition. And I read whole. I'm sorry. What happens now is problems come to this court and rules petitions. And I think I stopped when I got to 10 rules petitions in the last 2 or 3 years that this court has had to deal with piecemeal instead of in toto.
I understand that. I haven't considered whether, in 2010 this was done, and since then I'm sure there have been petitions. In this, at least, comment of mine or suggestion, I think that it's better to be able to have somebody who has a problem. This is what occurred at one of these hearings. Where do I go with this? Well, you got to wait 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so... maybe that's a better way to do it. Yep. That's about what I'm saying.
Good suggestion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I thank you all for your patience. We will see you at 1:30. The court is in recess.